The Offside Rule. We get it. Brought to you by a Wolves fan, a Manchester United fan, and a Liverpool fan.
Hello and welcome to the penultimate episode of the Offside Rule podcast for the 2013-14 season. It's your likely lot all together once more. Myself, Lindsay Hooper.
Kate Borsay, hello.
And Hayley McQueen. Good morning, afternoon, evening, good day, whenever you're listening.
We had Fake Brothers do that last week as well, trying to predict when everyone's going to download the podcast. Yes, well, good. You've covered all bases, haven't you? Let's rattle through this then, girls, because we've got so much to get through for this one. Not only have we got Sue Smith with her WSL Roundup, which is sponsored by Continental Tyres. We've also got Sean Thorne with a very good Twitter topic of the week off the back of Jack Wilshere giving Paul Scholes a little bit of a phone call. Coming up as well in topic two, we've got playoff, player off. Talking about the playoff finals. So we've got players who have sprung into action just for the playoff finals who might be transfer targets for the summer. And also, for our final topic of the day, football comes second. This is off the back of Julio Iglesias. Once upon a time was a goalkeeper for Real Madrid, did you not know? But obviously more famous for music. I'm thinking of others. Can we think and rack our brains of other people that are more famous for something else but started out life in football? You'll have to wait for that one though, because first, girls, it's FA TikTok. It took me a long time to come up with that title, by the way. Well, I best describe what it's all about then. It might be quite self-explanatory, but because Arsenal, after nine seasons of hurt, got their trophy drought behind them in the FA Cup final, I thought FA TikTok, extra time. So let's look back on FA Cup finals that went to extra time and got won in dramatic fashion over the years. Pick out the one that stands out for you. I did feel sorry for Hull City, by the way. Didn't anybody else? We had loads of people as well saying we're rooting for the Bumblebees. I was like, what?
I know, Tigers more like, the stripes are the wrong way round. We were there, weren't we, Linds? And we had a great day out at Wembley watching the FA Cup final. And it was a fantastic, what a great game to see. Two goals in the first 10 minutes. And then Arsenal, of course, slowly made their way back into it. But by goodness, Arsenal are Arsenal through and through. They had to make life difficult for themselves. And it was frustrating. I don't know, did they deserve to win? I guess they did. But I'm really pleased for Hull fans that they were right in it for a large amount of the game.
And before the game, John Motson was a guest in the FA Club, wasn't he? And we must thank the FA for going along. And in there, he gave his prediction. Now, thankfully, I gave my prediction before Motto, otherwise people would have thought that I was copying. But I did say 2-2, as did he. I think he got it even more accurate, because I think he said Arsenal to win in extra time as well. But it was such a good day, such a good an occasion. And at one point, I really thought that Hull City might do it.
Oh, I did. I just thought, after 10 minutes, oh my God. Gosh, are we going to witness a mauling of Arsenal here? Are they just going to crumble? I think we all knew that probably wasn't going to happen and they'd pull it back round. I think I was pleased for Arsene Wenger. I am a big fan of his. A lot of respect. I loved all the post-match celebrations as well when he had his shirt off like one of the players. I thought it was very funny. I would have loved Hull to have done it for Steve Bruce, big fan of his, of course, big United fan. But yeah, it was a great game to watch.
So Hayley, I'm going to come to you first, actually. With that in mind, any cup finals that have gone to extra time, what's the standout one for you?
Well, it was actually the first League Cup final to be played at the new Wembley Stadium. It was Tottenham looking for their first piece of silverware in 9 years up against Chelsea, who were holders. And it was an unlikely hero, Jonathan Woodgate, finding the winning goal in extra time. We all know about Jonathan Woodgate and how unlucky he is. So unlucky, he's now playing for Middlesbrough. Sorry, Middlesbrough. It's my hometown team. It's okay. I can knock them. We all know about what happened when he went to Real Madrid on his debut. But this was a cup final that he will remember. So Spurs did it. They won 2-1 back in 2008. Their first piece of silverware for 9 years. Tottenham put themselves back in the game after Chelsea went ahead through Drogba. There was Dimitar Berbatov converting from the spot as well after a controversial, but maybe not so, Wayne Bridge handball. But it was just Jonathan Woodgate needing 3 minutes of that extra time, and he did it. He got the winner for Tottenham Hotspur and made sure that Chelsea didn't get back-to-back League Cup trophies.
Kate, yours.
Well, talking of cup finals and extra time, 2005 was a big year for Liverpool, as a Liverpool fan, of course, with the Champions League. But let's talk FA Cup final for this one. A year later, 2006, we're in the FA Cup final against West Ham. We go two goals down. I'm working, by the way, not on a sports show, but I've got a very understanding Liverpool fan director in my ear who's feeding me updates. And what a magnitude of updates I had, because it was like a roller coaster going 2 goals down, one of which was an own goal by Jamie Carragher. Absolute nightmare. The other goal scored by none other than Dean Ashton. So Liverpool 2-0 down to West Ham inside half an hour, a bit like Arsenal, of course, but it all happened a little bit quicker for them before Djibril Cisse showed up, knocked in a goal, and Gerrard. In fact, the whole final's really known to Liverpool fans as Gerrard's final. Gerrard equalised.
And what a goal that was.
Even I remember it as a Manchester United fan and thought, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Well, the spectacular goal for Gerrard came with his second equaliser, because West Ham yet again went up. So 3 to West Ham, 2 to Liverpool, and we're in the dying minutes of the game here. Up steps King Steven Gerrard, the saviour of Liverpool from start to finish, and knocks in an equaliser, literally just bailed us out. It was a long-range strike, and that's the goal that you're talking about, of course, ladies. Absolutely fantastic. So the game goes to extra time. Nothing goes on in extra time. It's like a crampathon. Everyone's cramping left, right and centre. Players are hobbling around the pitch, clearly done in. I have to say, West Ham, of course, faring a little bit worse than Liverpool in that. It went to penalties, and as legend has it recorded, of course, Liverpool won 3-1 on penalties. It was a fantastic final. It was a very long shift for me in that particular job. I was on air, trying not to squeal. I wasn't allowed to wear a Liverpool top, but I had a little Liverpool badge, which was actually a Liverpool emblem out of a Panini sticker album that I'd managed to fashion a badge out of. That's how important it was to me that I had some sign of allegiance on this TV show. But goes down in history for me. One of the great FA Cup finals.
Brilliant stuff. Now, I'm going back, way back, to when I was a tiny tot. Were they sweets, by the way? They were very yummy, weren't they?
Tiny tots. Yeah. Yum.
Anyway, I digress. So, I was only about 4 or 5 years old when this FA Cup final took place. I'm talking about the 1987 FA Cup final between Tottenham and Coventry City. Now, coming from the West Midlands, this is sort of something that was talked about for many years amongst my family. It was Tottenham who were sort of expected and predicted to win this FA Cup final pretty much as a given. And Coventry City, who for the first time in 104 years were in the FA Cup final. So you can imagine they were real underdogs going into this. The thing that I remember about this story, and the reason why it came to mind when we were talking about FA Cup finals that went to extra time, is for a really peculiar reason. Chaz and Dave had a song. And this is back in the time when FA Cup finals, you released a song if you were in the final. And they had one called Hot Shot Tottenham. I don't know whether anyone remembers. And in the song lyrics, the thing that I remember is my family playing this over on like cassette or vinyl or whatever it was back then, because they were mocking the fact that they'd actually written these lyrics as if Spurs had won the FA Cup final in 1987. And of course, drama takes hold. 1-1, 2-2, extra time, and Gary Mabbutt's knee produced the goal that Coventry City needed for the underdogs to win. So Coventry City really stood out that day. Players like Cyril Regis, which are very famous in the area that I come from, he'd had a brilliant game. Glenn Hoddle was playing, Chris Waddle, you know, all these big names. So it's an FA Cup final that I was told about. I went back, and since the event of YouTube and the internet and everything, I've managed to go back and watch quite a lot of the clips of it, and one that I really like, and I like the underdog doing well, and that was Coventry City's turn. So 1987, that final.
I bet Spurs didn't play the old Hot Shot song again after that, did they, eh?
It's been buried somewhere. 3-2 in extra time, so that was a great one there. We will quickly take a break and get a roundup of all things WSL. It's courtesy of Sue Smith with our Continental Cup roundup. Here she is.
Hello, ladies. Here's my weekly FAWSL roundup. Manchester City, they just seem to have turned a corner after beating Liverpool in the Continental Cup last week. They played Arsenal at the weekend and they came away 1-0 winners, Tony Duggan scoring the only goal for them. And it just shows to me what winning a game can do, and the confidence in the team now. And they just seem to be getting better with every game. And we did say at the start of the season it would just take a little bit of time for them to gel. Looks like that could have happened now. Birmingham beat Chelsea 2-1. Probably a surprise to a lot of teams. I think a lot of people have predicted Chelsea to be up there as title challengers. But Birmingham beat them 2-1. Keeps the league just wide open. And for me, Birmingham just seem to have this fantastic team spirit and work ethic that's getting them a lot of good results this season. Notts County, who are still joint top leaders in the league with Liverpool, they played each other at the weekend and that game finished 0-0. Not the boring 0-0 game you would expect. Both teams created plenty of chances, just couldn't find the back of the net. Everton and Bristol also took a point apiece. The game finished 1-1, and this was another great advert for the women's game. In-form striker Nikita Paris first scored a brilliant lob to put the Toffees ahead, and then Nikki Watts equalised with a header for Bristol. This season, I'm sure, WSL 1 is going to be the closest and most competitive yet. Moving on to WSL 2, which I also think is going to be an exciting sort of finish to the season. My team, Doncaster Bells, we played Watford on Sunday. Really hot afternoon. Not that I'm complaining, because I'm used to playing in the cold winters that we used to play in, which, you know, isn't pleasant. So I'm definitely not complaining about the sunshine. We actually beat them 2-0. Which was great. Sunderland, who are obviously going to be title challengers this season, they beat London Bees 1-0. So both ourselves and Sunderland have got a 100% record in the league. So it's going to be an exciting finish, I think. Okay, so that's all from me. Until next week.
Thank you very much for that, Sue. And loads more WSL roundups to come throughout the summer as well. We will take a little break in a couple of weeks' time, but of course, women's football continues. We're going to move on to topic two then, and we've got lots of playoff finals happening at the moment at Wembley. A few have happened, a couple still to come. So let's talk about players. So the actual title for this is Playoff Player Off, and the indication being that the player might be moving elsewhere given some good performances. So starting with Hayley McQueen, who has been getting your attention?
Well, I've gone for a player who is at Rotherham United, who when he was 19 years old playing for Ilkeston Town probably didn't think he'd be playing in a final at Wembley, but lo and behold, Ben Pringle of Rotherham United will be there. He is in a battle for promotion. Now, he's a midfielder, and the story here, really quite a remarkable one. He didn't sign his first full-time contract until he was 20 years old. Derby actually picked him up. There are plenty of Derby players that can be mentioned in this topic as well. From non-league Ilkeston Town. 2 years later, just a couple of championship appearances, he was then allowed to join Rotherham in League Two on a free transfer. And my goodness, what a season he's had. And he wants to go on and do what many of the legends from Wall's End Boys have done over the years. He wants to join the likes of Alan Shearer, Michael Carrick and Peter Beardsley. He wants to be mentioned in the same breath of them because they all played for the same boys club. I don't know how often this happens, but Wall's End Boys Club, he represented them as a young player. There was also Steve Bruce as well from the North East, who played for them too. World Cup hopeful. That's, you know, Fraser Forster. He's going to be playing in a World Cup, and he came from there as well. All spent their formative years playing for the same boys club.
I can see a spin-off of the Class of 92 documentary here.
So they've had a steady stream of players coming in year after year. And I think Ben Pringle is a really good example of a player. If you're down there in non-league, just dream, because you might as well. Because players like this can show you that you could actually potentially even go and play in a playoff final. You could be at Wembley. I had a couple of candidates from the Derby side, but maybe one of you two have gone with one of those. I'm not too sure. If not, we'll come back to him, because my other player, I was umming and ahhing between these two, because the other perhaps has slightly more talent, but Ben Pringle just had a little bit more of a story for me.
So Ben Pringle has the nod. I haven't got a Derby County player, but has Kate Borsay?
Well, I was going to mention a couple. The one really obvious one to mention is someone who's been linked with someone way beyond the playoffs, and that's Will Hughes, of course. How long he's going to be at Derby is one thing. But one man to pick out, he's actually from West Bromwich Albion. It's George Thorne. I feel like I was going to say Sean Thorne then.
He's coming up later.
Yeah, Sean Thorne's coming up later. For now, George Thorne. He's 21. He's a midfielder. He had to wait, actually, to get his chance in Steve McLaren's team. Had to wait until, in fact, he had to wait well into March to get his chance. 11 appearances in total, but he's just got better and better as he's found his feet. He was voted Derby's man of the match during their championship playoff semi-final second leg against Brighton Hove and Albion. Of course, that aggregate score took them through to the playoffs. play our final against Queen's Park Rangers this weekend. Really interesting that, because Steve McLaren, of course, worked under Harry Redknapp at QPR. It's a real meeting of teams, this one. He did feature for West Brom under Steve Clarke, but he suffered a really bad injury. I think it was an anterior cruciate ligament injury, and he was out for several months. He went on loan to Watford before heading to Derby. Definitely done very well at Derby. He will, if he doesn't get his opportunity at West Brom, and he should do really, but if he doesn't, then I think he'll definitely be talking to other clubs. He's talked about perhaps signing for Derby if they're promoted, but says that he won't really reveal anything or talk at any advanced level until after that playoff final. So one to mention, George Thorne, 21 years old, midfielder, on loan from West Brom, but doing great for Derby.
Thank you. I'm going to go for a player that played in the Cambridge United Gateshead final, the playoff final from the conference, which has seen Cambridge United go into League Two. And by the way, congratulations to everyone at Cambridge United on that. I'm going for Ryan Donaldson. Now, he was key in the final. Not only did he score a cracking free kick to put them 2-0 up, he actually set up and had an assist for Hughes' earlier strike. I'm talking about Liam Hughes, who put them 1-0 up. The little bit of, I suppose, poetry, football poetry that we get occasionally is that Ryan Donaldson used to play for Gateshead. Mm-hmm. So he's going up against his former team. He was man of the match in that game, and he was also man of the match back at Wembley in March, because you might recall that Cambridge won 4-0. They beat Gosport Borough at the FA Trophy game. They won that 4-0. So two goals for Donaldson in that match as well. Saw him get another man of the match. He really has been getting lots of plaudits. He's a really versatile midfielder and striker, which I think is going to play to his benefit as well, because when a League One club comes knocking for him, which I think they will, he has got that versatility within the squad, hasn't he? So I think Ryan Donaldson could be making a leap, not just from League Two. I think he might skip a league over the summer and go up to League One.
So many names to mention, aren't there? I tell you what, wouldn't it be gutting if you were a key man to your team all season and then you missed out on a final? I'm just hoping, fingers crossed, Scotland's Craig Bryson gets the chance to play in a final, because he missed the second leg of the semi-finals against Brighton, unfortunately. He's weighed in with 16 league goals. He had a hat-trick against Nottingham Forest. He has been a real key figure for Derby all season and will be in the final to get them up. I think other teams will definitely have an eye on him, but as Kate said, I think it'll be more your kind of Will Hughes and George Thorne who may be tempted elsewhere. I think Derby need to keep hold of players like Craig Bryson. I think the fact he's a really good age, he's a wonderfully skillful midfielder, it'd be nice to have him as well playing in that league when he makes that step up. Steve McLaren has definitely got the best out of him. I don't know what he's doing as a manager there, but whatever he's doing it brilliantly. Took over when Derby were 14th when he arrived in October. A record number of points and the Championship's highest scorer. So good luck to them.
Yes, good luck. Well, we'll leave it there for a moment and we'll take a short break for Twitter topic of the week. And I've got a feeling, a sneaky feeling, that quite a few footballers' phones might be ringing this week. We asked in Twitter topic of the week who you would call off the back of the Paul Scholes incident with Jack Wilshere giving him a bell when after he criticised him. Which footballers would you like to call? Sean Thorne has got all of your tweets.
Twitter topic of the week.
Hello everyone, it's Sean here with Twitter topic of the week this week. And this week we are talking about phone calls with footballers. So after Scholesy tore apart one of Jack Wilshere's performances on the telly, Jack Wilshere, quite a humble bloke, just phoned up Scholesy just to ask for a bit of advice. So we're asking you guys this week, if you could phone any footballer and have a little chat with them, who would it be and what would you chat about? The FA qualified coach says, though I'm an Arsenal fan, I'd have to say Gary Neville because he's the most sense-talking pundit around. No bias, straight and honest pundit. I'm with you on that one. Tom S has gone for Pat Nevin. Intelligent bloke. He's seen the game from all the angles. Plus, he's got a cracking taste in music as well. Scott Cowling's going to give Roy Keane a call, just to find out how much he really hates Fergie and just let it go on and on and on. I hope you got plenty of 3 minutes for that call, Scott. Stevenage FC Ant, he's gone for Robbie Fowler because he's sure that he could convince him to put his boots back on because he's gagging to get back. Not sure how much of a rush Robbie Fowler is going to be to play for Stevenage, but maybe I'm wrong. You're going to need an extra few goals from somewhere, though, because I'm not sure Luke Freeman's sticking around. Stuart, he suffers from insomnia, so he's going to give Alan Shearer a call to get him back to sleep. Oh, Stuart. Poor Shearer. Taylor and Bestie would ring Hayden Ben Arthur and talk about his favourite sandwiches. Why not, eh? Cheers to everyone who got involved in this week's Twitter topic of the week. I've been Sean Thorne. I'm going to hand you back to the girls.
Thank you very much, Sean. We've got our third and final topic. Julio Iglesias, we all know. Has anyone got, or parents got any of his records, by the way? Just thought I'd do a quick straw poll.
Probably, but I'd like to say no and try and keep my parents still cool in my eyes. But
yeah, I'm going to keep mine cool. How about yours, Kate Borsay?
Mine are so cool. Mine are just jazz and classical music. There is literally no popular music in the Borsay household at all.
Debatable that jazz is cool, but...
Although they might not have a record, my dad probably has a programme from the days when Iglesias played football. More likely that, I reckon.
It's all stemming from the fact that he used to be a really good goalkeeper and he played for Real Madrid Castillas and then ended up going into music as was much more successful, obviously, in music, even though it was way before our times and maybe even our parents. But let's talk about other people that were good at football, maybe got to quite a good level, but have been much more famous for doing or much more successful for doing something else. I'm going to start with Hayley.
Well, Gordon Ramsay, we all know as the celebrity chef with the bleep, 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 bleep. Anyway, he used to play for Rangers. A lot of people kind of forget that, but he was a genuine, decent footballer who played for Rangers. And now he has this relationship with David Beckham, as we know, with his wife Tana and Victoria. But they don't just have food in common, which is quite funny with Victoria, really, isn't it? You wouldn't think she looks like she eats too much. But no, they all have football in common. He's a good London lad as well. Another from the Essex side of London, Mark Wright, before he was in The Only Way is Essex, he was actually a semi-professional. He had a career at Tottenham Hotspur as a youth player, and he actually rekindled his semi-professional footballing career. He signed for St Neots Town in January 2012. Okay, they might just be St Neots, but yes, he was a youth player at Tottenham Hotspur, but gave it all up because he basically said he needed to get an education. He just wasn't quite good enough.
Kate, your turn to pitch in.
Well, this chap's no longer with us, but I thought it was a really interesting story. So, born in 1923, this takes us back a few eras. So, not really from our era, but an interesting one to mention nonetheless. He's from Iceland, went over to Scotland to study business, started playing for Rangers. Okay, after a short stint there, he went to play for Arsenal, played in several matches for Arsenal.
I've just spotted his name, which is why you haven't said it yet.
No, I'm going to reveal all at the end. Thank you very much. My Icelandic's very good, Lindsay Hooper. Started playing for Arsenal. He didn't get a work permit in England, so he couldn't turn professional for Arsenal. So instead, he went to French club Nancy. He then signed for AC Milan before injury really ruined his career, and he headed back to Iceland. So what did he do when he headed back to Iceland? Well, this is what made him most famous. He became the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Industry. He even ran for president in 1980, but lost. The chap's name, Albert Gudmundsson. Look him up. No longer with us. Left the mortal coil in 1994. But yeah, from Arsenal and AC Milan to the Minister of Finance.
When did he run for president? Because I'm sure you just said 1980 and that would make him...
No, it was 100. It was 1980.
Really?
He wasn't the oldest when he left this earth, Lindsay Hooper.
Okay. What was his name again?
Albert Gudmundsson.
What was his middle name?
Segura.
It's so not Segura. I'm going to go for a religious angle on this one. And I'm going to give you two people who, okay, they didn't go to very much dizzying heights of footballing careers, but they were both goalkeepers and both have religious overtones. So I'm going to start with the holy goalie. This is Leonard Small. He was the moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland and he was a chaplain to the Queen, which is what he's most famous for. But he also was a very good goalkeeper. He played for Edinburgh University football team and he had high hopes. I think a lot of people tipping him to do very well. He played as an amateur for Scotland back in 1929, so I'm going back in the dark ages as well, Kate. And he was a real popular figure amongst the league. The church asked him to give up goalkeeping and he did, but he still wrote an autobiography, The Holy Goalie, which is why I mentioned that. And he was in love with the game, but showed much promise, but obviously decided to go with his religious beliefs first. And then John Paul II, II, the Pope. Did you know that he was also a very good goalkeeper? He played for his university, he played for his school sides. Apparently was from scouts and things told that he'd got a very powerful build. And in 1939, he put an end to his football career and dedicated his life to the Catholic Church. Oh, but did you know that?
Are we talking Emil Heskey powerful, or are we talking, you know, like actual Hulk powerful?
Hulk, because he'd have the divine power, wouldn't he?
Oh, I see.
Any more?
Talking about religious, what about David Icke? Of course, he became more famous for his slightly bizarre religious beliefs. And he's a goalkeeper as well, so perhaps it's something about goalkeepers. Quick one. In fact, probably similarly known for both careers, Curtis Woodhouse, formerly of Sheffield United and Birmingham, went on to become the light welterweight British boxing champion recently in February.
Linking that in, actually, Ricky Hatton, boxer. Yeah. As we know, he had trials for Manchester City. He didn't play for the youth team, so it's not like he was a famous footballer and then went to become a boxer. However, his dad and his granddad would both like him to have played for Manchester City, not because they were fans, but his dad actually played for Man City and so did his granddad as well. But he decided to join a local boxing club to get fit to play a little bit more football. But in actual fact, he was just so good at boxing, he took that up instead.
And for anyone who's a big fan of The Chase or Law and Order, Bradley Walsh, he played for Brentford. And actually, he didn't make the first team, but he did go on to play for Dunstable Town. He got an ankle fracture, which slowed him down a little bit. But he had 25 appearances for Dunstable Town, 15 goals. He went on loan to Barnet as well in the 1978-79 season. So Bradley Walsh.
How's this, though, for one? We all know that right now, Vinnie Jones out there, Hollywood actor, possibly if you can call him that. I'm not too sure what he's doing at the moment, but he has appeared. Heart attack specialist, yeah. Legend of those adverts. Was a footballer. We all know he was part of the crazy gang, played for Wimbledon, of course. But there'll be a generation now that don't remember that Vinnie Jones. Like the kids that are coming up now that won't know that David Beckham played football. Of course they do, because he's David Beckham. But we're really lucky that we grew up watching players like this. Maybe in 20 years' time, Cristiano Ronaldo will be some model. I don't know. Something. He'll be doing something, won't he? He'll be like, oh yeah, that guy who used to play football, David Beckham, Vinnie Jones, that guy who used to play football. But they were so famous for playing football. Now they're obviously doing different things. David Beckham, an ambassador for pretty much everything. But yeah, Vinnie Jones, hard man. I'd never have had him down as going on and appearing in Hollywood, but it does happen. George Clooney was apparently a really great baseball player and would have signed up professionally, but instead went on and tried to be an actor. And thank goodness he did.
Thank goodness he did. We've got one more quick break. We've got Law, who's just rounding up everything that happened in the French leagues. All of the leagues coming to an end. It's that time of the year, isn't it? Here's Law James.
Filling the gap between the end of the domestic season and World Cup preparation, journalists are getting excited about French transfers. Bafétimbi Gomis, the Lyon striker who has for some time been monitored by English clubs, is in talks with Galatasaray, Turkish media have said. At Parc des Princes, goalkeeper Salvatore Sirigu has agreed a new deal, but Adrien Rabiot is still waiting at Paris Saint-Germain, frustrated at those who are involved dragging their heels. Meanwhile, Monaco have confirmed Eric Abidal will have contract extension negotiations from next week, which is great news for him, despite Claudio Ranieri having departed as manager. He's been succeeded by Leonardo Yardim. France boss Didier Deschamps has said excluding Abidal from his selection was one of the hardest decisions he's had to make. Brazilian Lucas has also missed out on playing for his country, but he said he doesn't regret moving to Paris Saint-Germain and believes he's one of the strongest players there in his position. If I were the manager, he said, I would pick me. Ex-pros in France are known for their winning pedigree, and we're about to find out how they will do as managers. Bordeaux have said they're finally going to hold a press conference to announce the arrival of Zinedine Zidane, and Claude Makélélé is about to take over at SC Bastia on a two-year deal.
Thanks very much for that, Laura. Next week, we'll be rounding up the remaining foreign leagues, and it will be our final podcast of the 2013-14 season.
Before we're back for the World Cup.
Hurrah!
Yeah, I know, mid-June. So mid to end June, we'll be back with some World Cup specials.
Brilliant. But one more to go, and Kate and Hayley are going to be on that one. I won't be, I'm afraid. I'm away. So this is a final bow out from me. So thank you very much for listening this season. And remember to check out all of the new content on the website as well. OffsideRulePodcast.com. We've got loads of new blogs in there. We're already talking about the World Cup, which is coming up. Some great features. And give us a follow on Twitter as well, at OffsideRulePod. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.
The female take on football.